Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 2. Brian Hazy, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, Ramona Shelburne of ESPN later in the hour. Our best bets brought to you by ProLine later in the hour. And Darren Dreger, a hockey insider, here momentarily. We're waiting to hear from Cooperstown and the Baseball Hall of Fame. And I think someone's going to get in, but it's not guaranteed, as we pointed out, which would be somewhat of a goofy kind of like roll call on all this. Like you're going to go to the votes, and what are we thinking here at Cooperstown? Wow, it's been a tough year, but we could really love to get back in there and celebrate some careers. And I'm not sure anyone's going to get voted in.
Troy Hawkins gets voted in.
Do you remember when Jeter went in, there was one hero that didn't vote? Like, what was his explanation? Did he ever come forward with that?
I think he did, but I don't recall exactly what it was. I don't remember the reasoning. I remember reading it, and you just gloss over it because it's stupid.
Yeah, you're like, the guy just
because every time he went up to Jeter basically said, buzz off, you pigeon. And that's why he said, I have no time for Jeter.
That's what's happened historically. Like, a lot of these voters, they're reporters, they're beat guys, columnists or whatever, and it's sanctimony. They didn't like someone because that person was mean to them and refused to put them in the Hall of Fame. And wow, that's just outrageous.
Well, then Bonds is never getting in, ever, because he was a jerk to people.
Oh, he was awful. And I get it. Like, as much as I think you should be above that, you should be above that. It's about the Hall of Fame. It's not the most sacred thing in the world. You know, we talk about Hall of Fames like they're so precious and they need to be, you know, handled with kid gloves. They're not. It's a hall with some plaques in there.
That's ridiculous.
It's players that we know. You determine who is a Hall of Famer.
You've been down at the Hockey Hall of Fame with Duffy and the ceremonies.
Down there. It's awesome.
So it's not some place with some plaques and pucks and stuff, you moron. Right. That was a dumb comment.
This guy's such an idiot here.
The point I'm trying to make is it's not the end of the world.
Okay, but it's also not some guy's barn with some plaques in it.
It's not. It's bigger than that. I should show it more respect. You're right. I've been to the Hall of Fame many times. I've been to Cooperstown.
It's a barn with some plaques in it. No, you're right.
The point I'm getting to is your career was your career. And if you're a Hall of Famer, it's because of what you did during your career. Whether or not you're in there or not, I'm sure the individual players would like to be in there. Barry Bonds knows what he was as a player.
And I'm sure Bonds, he sleeps well at night.
That's the point I'm trying to make here. Not for Joe Blow, the average fan, who loves going to the Hall of Fame. I've been there many times. I've been to Cooperstown many times, or once, but I would happily go back. Great spot. The point I'm trying to make is, if you're Bonds, if you're Clemens, whatever, I had a Hall of Fame career. Look what I did.
Right.
You know, you want me to? If my plaque is there, it's not like these guys walk by there every single day. You know, it's there. If you're in, you're in. If not, then whatever. And sometimes we build it up like it's this place of perfection. It's not.
I thought of what I've been reading is the baseball voters are kind of turning the corner, or were turning the corner, on both of those guys, and they. I was just reading it through different articles.
The younger voters are. Like
they're saying, these guys still did the work. They still won the games. They still hit it out of the park. They're going to get in. But it's just, I guess.
Well, they're just looking at the numbers. Right?
Or look at PED fatigue. You know, it's like, all right, we get it. Like, that was a long time ago. And it was hovering over the game for a long time. Now we're moving on, you know.
Right.
Like, we understand it. 20 years ago was a big story. It's not anymore, luckily. And prior to PEDs, Bonds was still a great player. Prior to PEDs, Clemens was a great player.
But there's still guys getting pinched for it, like in today's game.
Yeah.
Like, not
it's
just not
as prevalent,
much.
Though.
Right. But they're using different stuff maybe that doesn't get traced, or guys are just different with their health approach, too, that maybe they don't feel like they need it. But remember the Leaf, Carter Ashton? Remember him? He got pinched for using like a horse tranquilizer or something to lean up. Like, it wasn't that he showed up and he had, you know, three heads or anything. It was like a recovery agent that was illegal, and he got pinched for it. Like, it's unfortunate. I get it. People that are, you know, talk about cheating or not cheating, there's rules. But I also, you know, subscribe to, you got it done. Like, you know, you can't take the home runs away from Barry Bonds.
Exactly. I've always looked at it as, you know, I don't need the Hall of Fame to define that player as a Hall of Famer. Will make up my own decision on that. And for me, Bonds is a Hall of Famer. Whether he's in Cooperstown or not makes no difference to me.
I don't want to keep bringing this up, but what would keep Schilling out of the Hall of Fame? Just his personality and some of his life decisions, correct?
Yeah.
Is that what I'm getting from all of this?
I mean, I guess maybe if you look at his stats, it may not be grand slam, like absolute lock.
Right, right.
But for me, he was, based on his career. I mean, what he did throughout his career, from Philly to Arizona to Boston, won a ton of games, won World Series. You know, for me, I would think he would get in. But if you're not a grand slam, like cannot miss, if you open up the door for any sanctimonious voter to say, I don't like you, and I guess that's always been my issue as well. You know, as I try to recover from my statement about the Hall of Fame just being a room with plaques in it, I guess what I'm saying is these voters think of themselves as, you know, they're the beacons of hope for you and your future life. You know, I can give you that key. And the way I feel about you will determine whether or not you go. And that's always bothered me. Like, it's always bothered me that some players don't get in because the voters are like, no, don't like him. He was mean or whatever it might be. And the arbitrary nature of what defines a Hall of Famer, you know, character and all that kind of stuff. Here's our TSN Hockey Insider, Darren Dreger. What's happening, Dregs?
A little snowstorm out here in Ontario, Canada, but nothing we can't manage.
No, it's long overdue. I mean, you're a Sasky boy. You've probably been wondering what's been going on the last month and a half.
I walked outside just to let the dogs go for a trot earlier today. And then I realized I was wearing shorts and a t-shirt. I got my slippers on with shorts and a t-shirt. I'm like, I can't do this anymore.
You better get ready, Dregs, because that dog of yours, when that snow melts, your backyard, watch out.
No, just buddy.
Watch. What?
No. I'm all over it, though. Look, I'm not some big dog rookie here, man. I've got a shovel at the bottom of the stairs, and at least once every 2 days, I'm out there shoveling.
Crap. Shoveling crap, right?
Correct.
Yep, that's what we're talking
about.
What do
you do? You shovel it and throw it over the neighbor's fence, or what do you have to do? But like, what is your routine? You shovel it and put it into a bag, and you put it in the garage, and like what? I don't know.
Yeah, it's gross, but essentially that's what you do. I live right adjacent to a forest. I've got trees on one side and trees right behind. But apparently, and I didn't know this till a couple of years ago, you're not supposed to throw your dog crap into the trees. So, and can get in trouble for it, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and online stuff, Dregs. I mean, you and I live around the same neighborhood, and I see it all the time, the neighborhood post. Whoever left this on the trail, it's like you're taking pictures and posting them about a trail. You know, do you realize there's wild animals out there doing that too?
Yeah.
You know, like, what are you, analyzing this? Wow, but what dog breed that's coming from?
There are lazy dog owners, too, that do the shoulder check after their dog has just taken a huge moose and just keep walking.
What if you guys haven't seen the worst video at all. When the lady, she used her mask to pick up the dog crap and then fired the mask back on.
Oh, stop it.
Come on. I swear on my life it's out there on Twitter. She was like, I got to pick this up. She grabs her mask, puts it away, and then the mask fired right back up. It was beautiful.
Wow. So not to get too graphic or gross here, but I am. So Tiny, being 130 pounds, requires the extra large bags, okay? Ooh. I'm walking her in the fall, and normally she goes to the backyard, and it's all good. You know, no issues. I'm walking her down the street. She does her business on a boulevard, and it was the sloppiest mess you could ever imagine. And here I am.
That's where you got to take a call, Dregs. You take a call and you walk away.
No, I couldn't walk away. But what's worse is I'm trying my best to clean it up. And it was a two-hand job. And I mean, like, come on.
Yeah.
That's anyway.
So don't, yeah, just stay away from my neighborhood. I know where you live. Stay over there. And don't, right, I don't need to see that horse walking down my street.
Exactly.
Anytime soon. With Derek Dreger, a Hockey Insider. I feel like whenever we bring you on, Dregs, we're waiting to hear what's going to happen next with scheduling and with COVID and all that kind of stuff. And this one division in particular has been hit, you know, the hardest,
yeah,
with Tampa and Carolina and Florida. And mm-hmm. There's a weird theory that I'm starting to buy into, is that it might actually open the door for one of the lesser teams like Chicago, maybe Detroit, to take advantage of that. If the scheduling is going to be so crazy for Carolina and for Tampa and Florida, who might be kicking around as a playoff team, maybe you could take advantage if you avoid it and your schedule gets spread out a little bit. It just might be a sloppier division, which could allow for more parity.
Right. And on top of that, if you're playing against those teams when the schedule returns back to form, you know, it's probably fairly safe that they're not 100% healthy. You know, I mean, the Buffalo Sabres not taking advantage of the Washington Capitals. Now, you know, Buffalo's in a different place than the Washington Capitals are, even without those four top players. But there's opportunity there. So when the schedule makers get down to further condensing and trying to squeeze these games in, it 100% is going to make an impact on some of those head-to-head meetings. And for sure, there's going to be opportunity. What the schedule makers and the commissioner's office are praying for is that there are no new outbreaks. You know, one or two cases on a team here or there, they can manage. I mean, that's what the taxi squad is all about. But if you have more of what we saw in Dallas, more of what we've seen in Carolina, then that further stresses out the schedule. And then there's only so many days that they have at the end of the regular season before they start the playoffs. So it could get real tense, especially in the second half.
Dregs, is there any kind of, you think there'll be a trickle-down effect from the Dubois-Laine trade where other teams are going to look and say, you know what, it's early, but I need this and I got to go looking for it?
Well, there could be, I talked to a few general managers today about that, and nobody seems overly moved on it. Frank Saravalli on Insider Trading tonight is keeping an eye on Vince Dunn and the St. Louis Blues. I think there's a strong chance he's going to be a healthy scratch. He hasn't played very well by all accounts. And that's kind of sparked some interest. You know, he's fresh off signing a one-year contract extension. But, you know, we're not going to see anything close, of course, to the magnitude that we saw between Winnipeg and Columbus. And, you know, what's gumming it up, and it's pretty obvious, again, related to COVID-19, is the quarantine issue. Yeah. You know, Dubois may not be available. He might miss as many as, I think I counted, 7 games today for Winnipeg. And conversely, the Winnipeg Jets are testing Patrick Laine in Winnipeg. Now, I believe he's still in Winnipeg, unless he left today. And it's an immigration thing. Until he gets his immigration papers cleaned up, then he's going to stay there. Columbus is going to send a private jet. And when he gets to Columbus, all he needs to quarantine for is 48 hours. And then he's good to go. So that would spook a lot of the Canadian interest as well in dealing with, you know, the 24 other teams around the National Hockey League on the U.S. side.
Well, the Leafs are in a position where their depth is getting challenged in terms of goaltending. Hutchinson's going to move in. They're not going to go out there and find another goalie unless they claim someone off waivers or something along those lines, but no one of substance. But up front, you know, their depth is strained a little bit. I don't think Spez is going tonight because of his age, and they want to kind of ease him into the season, which might say something about how they feel about his game overall as well. I think if he was chugging and really playing well, he'd probably be playing tonight.
Right.
So where do you see that going, Dregs, in terms of, you know, the rumor mill and the idea that the Leafs might be looking to upgrade in their depth and specifically up front?
Well, I can't imagine Jason Spezza is okay with it. You know, even though there would have been a conversation prior to the start of the season saying, look, you know, no different than Joe, we're going to manage your games. And with the back-to-backs and the tight schedule, you know, don't be surprised if there's some games where you're just not playing. You know, there are a few pro athletes in hockey who are willing to embrace that unless you're dinged up. But I don't get the sense in dealing with Leaf sources that they're actually looking at the market. I think that they want to give an opportunity to some of the younger players that they have in the system. Joey Anderson was considered to be a real good prospect coming into this regular season, so find out what he's all about. Likewise with Boyd, find out what he's all about. As you get deeper into the season, you know, if a player pops up that you could maybe squeeze into your top nine, who has an upside to push into the top six, like a Zach Hyman, well, then maybe you consider that at that point. But right now, I think it's more about getting everyone settled down, but also making sure that organizationally they know what they have to work with.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. You know, they're not alone. There's teams throughout the league. We're 2 weeks in. There's going to be injuries. There's going to be you know, different things popping up on a daily basis. And we talked about it all offseason. Your depth is going to be challenged. You know, even if you're healthy, it's going to be challenged at some point.
No question.
That's what we're dealing with here already. So, yeah, we'll see. It's going to be a fun one tonight. And last night we talked a little bit about this in Vancouver. And I guess DJ Smith, the head coach in Ottawa, is already kind of laying down the framework of we better get it together and there could be lineup changes.
I got to interject here, guys. I don't understand, like, there is a portion, I don't know how much, of Sen's Twitter that believe that DJ Smith is to blame for all of this, and I think that's crazy. And you know, there is going to be growing pains. These young kids are going to go through the process, and the veteran guys, like, they haven't played well. Anisimov's, Derek Stepan, you know, Braden Colburn's been in and out of the lineup.
Even
like,
Dadonov.
You know, Dadonov's got one goal, and he's got a couple looks, but he hasn't been a difference maker. But, like, it's still early, and I would much – this is just my opinion. I would much rather have DJ protect the younger players through this uncertainty and not expose them to get rinsed. Instead of putting them out there and saying sink or swim, and they get rinsed in a bad situation, and it takes them 2 weeks to recover. And by the way, you don't have 2 weeks to recover because you're playing again the next night or two nights later. Like, I see that there is a plan there, but I the fan base is very passionate, and I respect that. But I just, they're going to be punching up every night. Like, Ottawa is playing a team on paper that is better than them. Every night this season. Every night.
Right. Yeah. Well, DJ can't stop the puck. And, you know, he can't defend. You know, Thomas Chabot was no good in that game. You know, defensively as a team, they were no good in that game. You know, I'm watching it, and I'm thinking to myself, man, did they miss Pageau? Now, you know, just because of everything that J.G. Pageau brought to that team and how responsible he was and all of that. So it's got to be about opportunity. You know, Colin White is a big contract sitting in the press box. He's going to be in the lineup tomorrow for the Ottawa Senators. In DJ Smith's mind, he looked at Colin White as the five center for the Ottawa Senators. Well, Colin White gets an opportunity because others are suffering through bad play. He's got to make the most of it. Colin White is going to change the fortunes of the Ottawa Senators in one game, but he might be able to change his own direction. And maybe there needs to be a little bit more self-accountability throughout that lineup. Otherwise, it's going to get ugly, a lot more ugly in a hurry.
Yep. No, you're right about that. And they're playing the same six teams every single time, right?
Yeah.
It's like Detroit's not waiting for them, Chicago.
Yeah, there's just no nights where you're like on the same –
we're
on the same page.
Yeah, they're going to win their games naturally.
Yeah, they will.
But they're in a tough spot, and they're only 2 weeks into this grind. We'll see where it goes. Good stuff, buddy. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you for this.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
Darren Dreger, a TSN Hockey insider. So there's some baseball news pouring in. We were talking about the Hall of Fame. No one has been elected to the Hall of Fame in 2021. So I got to admit, I thought someone might sneak in, if not a guy or two.
Just for the PR look to have one or two guys.
Where it's trending. Because a lot of voters reveal their ballots well in advance, so you kind of know where it's trending. And according to Rosenthal, Stark, and others, Curt Schilling missed by 16 votes. So he just missed. I believe he's still eligible for next year to be inducted. But Baseball Reference tweeting out, years with no elected Hall of Famers, 1945, 1946, 50, 58, 60, 71, 96, 2013, and now 2021. So there is some precedent. It has happened before. First time in 8 years, only the second time in 25.
Wow.
But that means Bonds and Clemens didn't get in. You know, like that's essentially the story every year. Bonds, Clemens, will they get in? Didn't happen. And the Blue Jays have made a signing. Marcus Semien from the Oakland A's, who is a guy who can play second, he can play third. Scotty Mitchell is reporting that they intend on playing him at second base, so I guess that means Biggio's moving around. Maybe Biggio goes to third. But 30 years old, expected to play second, a one-year deal at $18 million. Like that's a pretty big price tag.
Yeah,
only a one-year deal, not a ton of commitment, but this is a guy who can move around the diamond a little bit. His bat fell off last year, but prior to that, he put up some big numbers, played every single day on some really good Oakland teams. This is a bit surprising. I mean, his name has been linked a little bit here or there, but that's a pretty good signing on the surface for the Blue Jays.
1 year at 18 sheets, and you don't even blink an eye.
Don't even blink an eye. That's baseball, man.
Yeah, and the economics are so different.
Take advantage of it, right?
No,
like,
you're right.
Like
sure.
Bring him in here, take advantage of a market. Clearly, if he had 2-, 3-, 4-year deals, he would have taken them. So the Jays probably played the market appropriately. And said, okay, if everyone's only offering 1 year, we'll do the same, but make sure we'll top up whatever you get out there.
Yeah.
So if a team says we'll give you $17 million, come back, we'll give you $18 million. That's probably the way this played out. But it adds depth to the infield, you know, and if he's expected to play second, he can't play a little bit of third too. Biggio, Bichette, Semien, and I believe that means that Vladdy will play first. That's pretty good.
Vladdy, my focus has shifted, Hayes. I don't even want to see Vladdy anymore. I want to see my guy Roark at spring training. He isn't exactly Rod Brindamore out there.
No, he's
not. But what about the grit grinder too? The 5 foot two.
Alejandro Kirk.
Kirk
is a guy fighting for a gig, man. I don't know if they see him playing catcher in the bigs. Like I don't know. I mean, I think Danny Jansen's got the job. I think Jansen's going to be the starting catcher, but Kirk is a guy that can DH. Like pinch hitting, remember? That's when he stepped in, and he had a couple of big pinch hits late in the year.
I know.
5'2", 280.
Somebody was pitching to him. I might have been from the Yankees, and this guy was a monster. And Kirk was, what is he, 5'5"?
Yeah, he's like Dustin Pedroia, basically. He hits like over his head almost to hit the strike zone. Like he's got kind of a goofy swing that is necessary for his build, but man, it connected for him, right? Like he had a really quality run there at the end of the year.
You hope that a guy like that, as the team gets better and better, like he might just disappear, unfortunately. But you hope that he finds a spot, or at least finds a spot in the league too, right? Like
for sure. I think he's got some value. If you get to the bigs and you can hit major league hitting, you're going to find a job. And it's small sample size, but he did that. And I think he's still in the fold. He's still going to be a part of this team. And Semien comes aboard. He hits right. So that's another right-handed bat to go along with Springer, to go along with Bichette, Vladdy, you know, Gurriel, Hernandez, Jansen. It's a lot of right-handed hitters on this team, but that's fine. If you remember in 15, Donaldson hit right, Edwin hit right, Bautista hit right, Pilar hit right, Tulo hit right. Like they were a predominantly right-hitting lineup, and it didn't matter. All they did was mash and win ball games. So if you got a bunch of really quality players together, you can make it work. But that's a good signing, I think, on the surface. And I don't know what it means for who plays third base, what it means for the pursuit of, you know, we were talking about Chris Bryant a couple of hours ago. Are they in on Bryant? Kirkjian didn't really seem to think that was a possibility at the time, and maybe he knew this was coming. But there's an addition in the infield and a pretty good player and a veteran presence in your clubhouse as well. So Marcus Semien is a Blue Jay one-year deal at $18 million. We'll get more into that. Baseball Hall of Fame. Again, no one is going to be inducted in 2021. And Ramona Shelburne will join us on the Raptors' loss last night, where they go from here and other storylines around the NBA. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, we'll get to our best bets brought to you by Proline later in the hour. Blue Jays making a signing here. Marcus Semien is aboard. He's been in Oakland for a number of years. It sounds like he's going to play second base. That means Biggio will likely move around. They still don't have anyone locked in at third base, you know, so I guess they still could be in the market for Justin Turner, maybe Chris Bryant. You know, maybe Biggio plays third. Maybe Vladdy's an option there. But 1 year, $18 million. A couple of years ago, he had 33 bombs for a very good Oakland team. It's the guy that plays every single day. It's a big signing for the Jays. So they're moving and shaking, man. This offseason is moving in the right direction here. I should point out George Springer will join us tomorrow at 6:05. So we'll catch
That's
up with
great.
George
nice.
Tomorrow. Yeah, we're looking forward to that. And Raptors with a loss last night, but 5-2 in their last seven. Been a strange start to the season. Lots cooking in the NBA. And to chat about it, we're joined now by Ramona Shelburne of ESPN. How you doing, Ramona?
Doing good. How are you guys?
We're doing well. I feel like we constantly recalibrate how we feel about this Raptors season. You know, they've been so good for so long. We've been so lucky to just watch them run out winning seasons and a title a couple of years ago. But they're in Tampa. They started 2-8. You know, their depth has been challenged. They've had some injury problems. They're clearly not a top-tier team in the East, but I still think they can be a middle-of-the-pack team. Where do you stand on the Raptors and the improvement of a lot of teams in the East?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, like, I'm kind of – I feel like the teams in the East are like, you know, the Raptors are the only ones who have proven they can win a title of this group, right? And we came into the season thinking, like, you know, okay, Milwaukee really wasn't great in the bubble, but – they're still the class of the East. They're the best record in the league last year. And, you know, they'll do better when they're back under normal circumstances now that they have Drew Holiday and Giannis is locked up. And it kind of hasn't been. I mean, they're good, but it hasn't. They're not running away with it like they were last year. Philly's been a nice surprise. They're kind of putting it all together. And Embiid's has like the highest PER in the league. He looks like an MVP candidate right now. Boston, same thing. But I got to be honest. I don't know how to read any team right now. I just the season is so weird with all these missed games and people sitting out with, you know, the postponements and this and that. So it was such a quick turnaround. It was such a weird off season, a weird season. Like, I just think as long as you kind of like stay in it, it almost might not matter what your records are, because I mean, by the time we get to the playoffs, maybe we'll have some fans or something, but it's just not the same as usually. Right. I feel like the Raptors know how to win, but they're adjusting to life without Serge and Mark. And I think Boucher's been a really nice surprise here, but it takes a minute. There's the consistency that they'd really gotten so much out of over the years. Took a hit when they lost those guys.
So with that being the case, has it allowed you to adjust your overall projections in terms of who's going to win a title or compete for a title, or do you still think the Lakers, Clippers, you know, the two or three teams you felt good about anyway, are going to be standing at the end?
I mean, it just looks like the Lakers are really good again, right? Doesn't it? I mean, they got a good game coming up here. They'll show us something when they play against Philly. I think their game's tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It seems to be the two best records in the East and the West, right? That's a good one. And you know, I think Joel Embiid sat out the other night so he could be ready for this one. He always enjoys these head-to-head matchup, and I everything I've seen from the Lakers is they look great. They look maybe better than last year even. The only question I had was how they were going to physically respond to such a short offseason, and then, you know, also when you win, you have that championship hangover sometimes. They don't really look like it. I mean, it kind of looks – Anthony Davis started a tiny bit slow for him, but wasn't really that big a deal. There's been a pretty seamless integration of Dennis Schroeder into the starting lineup and some of the additions they've made. So I just think they look great. The Clippers will look good, but, you know, until they win, they're almost like the Raptors from a few years ago before they won, right? Like, they look great in the regular season, but then I don't trust them yet until they win, so they got to prove something. The team that's really looked good to me this year so far is Denver. I think they look, you know, Jokic obviously been playing at an unbelievable level, but that's the team I'm wondering if they take that real step forward, right? Because that's a team that could crack into that Western Conference and upset things. But yeah, in the East, you know, other than Philly being a bit of a surprise and Toronto being a bit of a disappointment early on, but they've now kind of righted the ship a little. I think the East is kind of what we thought it was, right? Wide open.
Mm-hmm. Ramona, I just had a question. I know it's old news, but you're a connected person throughout the league. I just wanted to kind of get your take on kind of how the Harden thing went down, or just the opinion of everyone through the league and the ripple effect, and then just going to Brooklyn and the Kyrie Irving stuff. Like, do you think that they'll be able to put it together there and be a force, or is it just seem like there's just so many moving parts there?
You know, I have really enjoyed watching Brooklyn the last couple of games because Harden kind of turned into the facilitator. I mean, I saw the stat the other night. He had 19 shot attempts and 19 assists. Like, well, if James Harden's going to be that guy, then they're going to be real scary. Like, if he turns into the – because he's a great passer. I mean, he really could be that kind of a point guard. And he actually was that early in his career when he was the sixth man in Oklahoma City. That's what his job was setting up Katie and Russ. So this is, in a way, not the James Harden we've seen the last few years. It's a different version of him, but I think it's a good one. And in terms of how it went down, you know, look, there were a number of, like, 5-6 teams, I think, that were in it, you know, kind of going back and forth on trade offers and discussions. And the Raptors were interested. They kicked the tires on it. You know, they were just kind of gauging the interest level and their offer against the other offers. I think the problem for the Raptors was they would have to give up really the heart and soul of their team, right? They would have had to give up Siakam, or they would have had to give up VanVleet. And I don't think that either of those guys is valued as highly as the Rockets valued Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons would have been, you know, the best player they could have gotten for him, right? And so if you're Toronto, why are you going to go down that road? Like, if your offer is going to ultimately lose out to the other offers and you're not interested in, you know, completely gashing your team, I think they, you know, like, they stayed close, but it didn't get serious with them. And so I think it really came down to those two teams. And a little bit the Celtics, but they kind of backed away at the end. They were interested, but they, you know, Jaylen Brown's been playing so great, and Tatum's playing great, and then it's also hard to see what they. You don't want to give up too soon on those things. So I think the runners up, where it was Philly and Boston, they may end up being glad they didn't do the trade, right? Because they both have young teams with young stars that are trying to blossom, and if you pull the plug too soon on that, you tend to regret it, right? And this is different than the Kawhi trade. Kawhi had 1 year on his deal. So he wasn't going to get the same haul as James Harden was, who had 3 years left on his deal.
With Ramona Shelburne of ESPN. So you're in L.A., you live in L.A., you report from L.A. I think we caught up with you, I guess, 363 days ago after the passing of Kobe Bryant. And just to get your, I guess, take on the whole scene, yeah, and tragedy, but also the feeling around L.A. And now it's been a year without Kobe, and what obviously his legacy speaks for itself, but the mood around L.A. over the past year, there's been a lot of distractions with COVID and other things. But, you know, what does Kobe Bryant still mean to L.A. a year out?
You know, it's weird. It feels like a million years ago, right? It doesn't. It's because so much happened last year. Like, Kobe's passing was kind of like the first awful thing that happened in 2020.
Yeah.
And I still remember every single second of it. I mean, I remember where I was, what I did, how it felt, what I did afterward. I remember everything that happened that day, like it was yesterday. But in another way, it feels like it was a really long time ago, you know? And, you know, I think everybody kind of has that same feeling in L.A. Like, that L.A., he really feels kind of almost like the civic angel now. Like, he's all over the place. Everywhere you drive, there's murals of him and Gigi. I mean, it's like... And I hear people hear him referenced all the time, just in everyday conversation. It's Mamba mentality, Kobe up, right? Like, people just say it. Like, you know what it means now. You don't have to just define it, because he embodied that for so many people. And I think he became larger than life, you know, as a player, but even, you know, even maybe more so last year, right? So that's what it feels like in L.A. is like, it's a really sad thing, but it was the first really sad thing that happened last year. And, you know, I live in a city that's, you know, one of the, we've had a little decline in our COVID rates here, but it's been pretty bad for the past 6-8 weeks with the spike that we've had. I mean, it's, you know, LA was like the epicenter of the world, right, in terms of the highest infection rates. So everybody that you know knows someone who has either had COVID or died from COVID. I mean, it was just sort of the first, you know, Kobe's death was really like the first horrible thing that happened, and we haven't really seen a lot of sunshine since. Although I will say this, it was pouring rain the last few days here, which, you know, people in LA are like, oh my gosh, pouring rain, right? We freak out when the temperature gets below 50, okay? And it was weird because, you know, I remember it was foggy the day of the plane crash, the helicopter crash. It was really foggy. And I always remember the weather that day because that's really what caused this horrible crash. And you know, there was a detail in the LA Times that I hadn't seen anywhere else that really shook me the other day is that, you know, they were originally going to fly a little bit later, but I guess they moved up the flight because Kobe wanted to scout the game beforehand. And I just, you know, I have this awful thing like, God, you know, so many things just conspired to make that happen. You know, they leave an hour earlier so the fog hasn't burned off, like the marine layer fog, right? It was kind of cold. It was sort of, you know, the foothills there, it's just the fog just clings to them, you know, and they were flying so low. And I'm just thinking, man, if he left a little later. And then it was just the last few days, it was, you know, and our Facebook memories were kind of popping up, you know, and I was seeing the stuff that happened. And I remember just looking at the weather, and I was like, it's dreary and cold and rainy, and it just kind of fit the mood. And then today, bright, sunny, beautiful day. Just, it's like I'm sitting outside, and it's instead of, you know, covering up and wearing three jackets because we're such, you know, wimps here with cold weather, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's a typical, beautiful California day. And it makes me kind of think, like, you know, that's fitting. I'm really glad it is because, you know, I've been trying to just focus on celebrating his life and not just reliving all the horrible moments from that day because it really was just an awful, awful day.
Yep. That's, I think, very appropriate and hopefully will be the case moving forward. We always appreciate your time and your insight, Ramona. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you for this.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
There's Ramona Shelburne of ESPN, NBA insider and reporter from L.A., lives in L.A., from L.A., and 1 year since Kobe, and she's right. I mean,
yeah.
It feels like it was a decade ago and was the beginning of probably the worst year of everyone's collective lives. I mean, everyone's got different things going on in their individual life, but as a society, 2020 will never be forgotten.
No.
Will not be thought of as in a positive manner or a
Can't
positive
be.
Light.
Yeah. No,
it began with
right.
Kobe. It really did for a lot of people.
Yeah, you know what? I just looked at my schedule. I was flying back that day. Yesterday was from the All-Star game in St. Louis, I believe.
Right.
And that seems like a lifetime ago, and it's
All-Star
only one
games. Like that's an event that just gets naturally canceled now.
No kidding.
You know, like just automatically canceled.
Yeah, it's so weird. Yeah,
yeah.
Like that was that is a lifetime ago, but only a year. Wow, that's crazy.
Yep, it is for sure. So thanks again to Ramona for joining us, and we'll get back into this baseball signing. The Jays signing Marcus Semien to a 1 year deal at $18 million. Scotty Mitch is all over it on Twitter, kind of explaining the ins and outs of the deal and why it's only a one-year deal for a player who had a career year a couple of years ago, a down year this past year. So we'll get into that, what it means for the Jays, how much money they're spending. You know, we can say what we want, but they have spent a lot of money over the course of, you know, a couple of months here. And what it leads to, we'll find out. But you got to pay to play. And if they're a better team on paper, chances are there'll be a better team on the field. So we'll get to that more coming up in our Best Bets brought to you by ProLine. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, time now for our Best Bets brought to you by ProLine. Looking at the NHL board tonight, I'm under the number Buffalo New York Islanders tonight. And under the number in New York against Washington. And I'm on Colorado tonight. Throw down 20, you can score 78. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. ProLine is the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers in a big excitement. ProLine, put your knowledge on the line. So Cooperstown and the Hall of Fame voting came out this hour. No one is going in 2021. Bonds didn't get in. Clemens didn't get in.
They're
Schilling
not getting
didn't
in
get
then.
In.
They're not getting in then.
Next
year's their last
in.
Year.
Well, Schilling, it's his last year next year. Did you see
he's
this statement he just sent out?
Yeah, he's like, I don't even bother. Don't even put me on the ballot.
Which is so typical of him. Like, he is he's a hero, and he says and does a lot of dumb things. So Schilling issued this letter to the Hall of Fame at Cooperstown. He said, quote, I will not participate in the final year of voting. I don't think it's his call anyway. I am requesting to be removed from the ballot. I'll defer to the Veterans Committee and men whose opinions actually matter and who are in a position to actually judge a player, end quote. So there's a little jab at all the reporters that And that's kind of what I was getting to earlier. Listen, I'm not the biggest fan of Schilling, but a lot of it is sanctimony. A lot of it is, you know, the idea of voting based on someone's character, I think, is it's so arbitrary. And it's
just
like, where do you draw the line?
He just recently went off the rails, didn't he? Like, I think he worked for ESPN, dude.
Yeah. I don't know what
he did. He did baseball for ESPN.
He's gone off the deep end with a lot of different political opinions that I do not agree with personally. But I've never liked the idea of bringing in, you know, the person,
the personal side. Yeah,
like we're talking about the ball player here. Every player that's ever played sports is a human being that's probably done something
that
you don't like. So it's.
It's a slippery slope because you're right. You start to dig up garbage on people and realize that they're human.
Like, it was different, though, for me, Jamie. Like, I followed him on Twitter because I'm like, this is Curt Schilling, man. It was a stud pitcher, number 38. It's like, he followed me back. So then I started going through, like, he did this weird thing where he did this live, I think, political talk show every day. And I was watching these episodes, and I'm like, I gotta think I might have to mute this because he's discussing some stuff.
Yeah,
and he's got some different viewpoints.
No
question about that. But that's not what we're voting on here.
But that's the thing. Even if you disagree with him, which, you know, it sounds like all three of us do, that he still has the right to be judged on his body of work as an athlete, not his body of work of what he's done away from the field. And his opinions and all of that type
right.
of stuff. Like O.J. Simpson.
Is in the Hall of Fame.
That guy should be stripped of the Hall of Fame. He killed people. Like,
but
that's,
it's the
know,
player. And if I'm going to be consistent with this, like, in the baseball is the same thing. There are guys, by all accounts, Ty Cobb was the worst human being you could ever come across in your life.
Right.
The most racist, misogynistic piece of garbage ever. He's in. Because as a ball player, he's one of the all-time great players. And, you know, I get how it can be. It could be difficult where you're like, I have a difficult time separating myself. But I think you should do that if you're a voter. Like, and I think it's on the Hall of Fame to adjust their definition of what a Hall of Fame vote is worth as well. Right. What should go into it? You know, because I have seen countless people point out, hey, the reason I did this was because it says right here, character matters and what they did off the field matters. And if it's there, then it's open to interpretation, and it becomes an arbitrary definition of what you think is a Hall of Famer. It should be simply, was he or she a great player, period.
That's it. That's
and
it.
If they were a Hall of Famer on the field, put them in. And that gets back to my goofball comment earlier, which I didn't mean to disrespect the actual Hall of Fames.
I knew
that
we all knew
incredible.
What you meant.
They're great museums. They're great artifacts of history. It's a great experience. The point I was getting to was, what you did during your career is what really matters. You know, whether or not you're on a plaque in Cooperstown, you may never go back there ever again. Doesn't matter. It doesn't change my view as a fan. You know, I'm not going to the Hall of Fame every day to be like, oh, he's actually in. Now I think he's a Hall of Famer. I make that determination. But, hey, listen, no one's going to.
Players, it matters, Hayes. Like Barry Bonds. Yeah, like they know that when everybody refers to them, they say, that guy's a Hall of Famer. That guy was a stud, blah, blah, blah.
You're right. But these guys should, if that's all it's going to take, these guys could go on a, you know, a PR tour and save some of their reputation and maybe get those extra votes. You know what I mean?
Right.
Curt Schilling, if he wanted to go on the PR tour, all he'd have to do is just close his mouth and stop acting crazy on Twitter and saying things. And listen, his opinion is his opinion. It's not illegal to have an opinion, even if you disagree with it. But the point being is, it bothers me because it only works for well, that guy, but not this person, because
it generally doesn't swing both ways.
Right.
Of course not, in terms of the political spectrum.
But even like you just brought up, like O.J. Simpson, like that guy legitimately is an awful human being.
Mm-hmm.
But his body of work as an athlete, when
one of the all-time great players,
right,
all-time great, and yeah, I mean that's always been a conversation. What should happen there? What shouldn't happen? You know, if you did something that actually didn't hurt anybody, if it is just an opinion, if it is, you know, based on integrity of the sport, Pete Rose obviously comes to mind when we start talking about that. Where Pete Rose as a player, as far as we know, wasn't gambling or throwing it. He was gambling as a manager. So why isn't Pete Rose in there?
Yeah.
Had 4,000 hits.
He should be in there.
Of course he should be in there. It's long overdue to get Pete Rose in, but he's not going to get in now.
That should be a meme, him sleeping on the panel.
On Fox.
That's
the
a
World
new
Series.
Bernie
that Sanders should be
meme.
That should be the agreement. We'll put you in Cooperstown, but you're going in as a statue asleep on the panel. Do you accept Peter?
Yeah, be
yes
awesome.
Or no?
Yeah.
Leafs Flames tonight. How are we feeling about this game? I don't know.
50-50.
I don't know how I feel about 50-50. This one tonight.
I just want it to be an intense, good, competitive game,
yeah.
To be honest
with you. I think it will be.
I think it'll be a fun game. George Springer on the show tomorrow at 6:05. We look forward to that. Wheel of Misfortune tomorrow at 5:30.
Nice.
Enjoy the games tonight. Enjoy your evenings. We are back tomorrow at?
I love the new chair, 4 p.m.
Nice. We'll chat then.